For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's November the 14th, and in Treyasar and Hoshea, we are in Parakeh, chapter 5. Shimuzos HaKonim Vakshivu Beis Yisrael. Hoshea is continuing to give Musar to the Bnei Yisrael, particularly to the northern kingdom, although we will see that he will include Malchus Yehuda as well. So he says, listen to this, the Kohanim, and listen, Beis Yisrael, the Jews, Ubeis HaMelech, and the house of the king, Ha'azinu, listen, pay attention, Ki lachem ha-mishpat, for to you is justice, Ki fach ha-yisem le-mitzpah, because you were a trap for mitzpah, mitzpah is one of the mountains, V'resh es prusa al tavor, and you were a net spread on tavor, a different mountain. V'shachatos seitim he'emiku, and you enlarged, seitim means that which has people leave the proper way. Hemiku, you went further, you went deeper. Vani musar l'chulam, and I am musar. Musar means admonishment for everyone. Ani adati Ephraim, I knew Ephraim. V'Yisrael onichar v'meni, and Yisrael was not humbled from before me. Ki ata, he's nesa Ephraim, for you, Ephraim, have been promiscuous. Nitma Yisrael, Yisrael has become tame, has become impure. Read a little further. Lo yitnu ma'alaleihem lashuv el elokeihem. Their evil ways have not allowed them to go back to their God. Ki ruach zinunim b'kirbam, because the spirit of promiscuity is within them. Ves Hashem lo yado, and Hashem they did not know. Va'ana gaon Yisrael befanav, and the gaon Yisrael, sounds like the leader of Yisrael, would testify in front of him. V'Yisrael v'Ephraim yikashlu b'avonam, and Yisrael and Ephraim will stumble in their sins. Kashal gam Yehuda imam, and Yehuda will stumble with them.
Here gaon says pride.
What's that?
Here it says gaon is pride.
The pride of Yisrael, okay. Bitzonam uviv karam, with their sheep and with their cattle, yelchu levakesh es Hashem, they will go to seek an Hashem. V'lo yimso, they will not find. Chalatz mehem, he has distanced himself from them. We'll explain that a little bit more, that word, chalatz mehem. One more. V'Hashem bagadu, they have rebelled against Hashem. Kivanim zarim yaladu, for they have brought into existence foreign children. Atoyo chleim chodesh eschelkeim, and now the month, the chodesh, will consume their portion. Not very clear. We're going to start with the first pasuk. We're going to go through it, but I want to make one point before we go back to the first pasuk. If you look in pasuk Dalet, verse 4, so in the middle of that pasuk it says, Kiruach zinunim bikir bum, because the spirit of promiscuity is within them, is in their midst, within them. If you look back at in Perek Dalet, in chapter 4, there's a similar phrase. There is a similar phrase, which I have to find because I was using a different text last night. Looked for this before. But there's a similar phrase there. Yes, in Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Beis, chapter 4, verse 12. Kiruach, in the middle of the pasuk, it says, Kiruach zinunim hisa, for the spirit of promiscuity has caused them to go astray. So there it says the same words, Kiruach zinunim, for the spirit of promiscuity, and there it says it caused them to go astray. Here it says, Kiruach zinunim bikirbam, is within them. So the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, when discussing the system of the Yetzer Hara and how the Yetzer Hara works, so the Gemara says the Yetzer Hara starts off with just being a little bit of a nuisance. And then a person starts to follow it, then it becomes something which leads that person astray. And if a person continues to follow it, then it actually resides within the person themselves. The Yetzer Hara becomes more and more controlling of the person. The more that we follow it, the more it controls us. So it goes, here you have the contrast, where it goes from being that which is leading us astray to actually being something within us. And it's much more difficult, obviously, to rid oneself of the Yetzer Hara when it becomes part of a person. It's much more difficult, much more dangerous.
Isn't that like the Nahash?
Yes. Yeah. Very good. Same idea. Going back to the beginning of the Perek. In the first Pasuk, Hosea addresses three groups. He starts with the Kohanim. Then he mentions the Beis Yisrael, the house of the Jews. Then he mentions the house of the king. So the Medrash and the Gemara Yerushalmi tell us that there's a progression here, that Hosea first was addressing the Kohanim. Hashem told him to address the Kohanim. And the question to the Kohanim was, Kohanim, how come you are not serving me faithfully? Didn't I give you the Chaf Dalet Matnos Kuhuna? Didn't I give you the 24 gifts of the Kohanim that the rest of the Jewish people are obligated to give to the Kohanim? So I gave you all those things, all those privileges. Why do you not follow me, and why do you not lead the Jews in following me? So the Medrash says that the Kohanim responded, we're not getting those 24 Matnos Kuhuna. No one's giving them to us. They may, it may be that they're supposed to be giving them to us, but they're not. So then the Navi addresses the Beis Yisrael, the Jewish people, and says to the Jewish people, why are you not giving the Chaf Dalet Matnos Kuhuna? Why aren't you giving the 24 gifts of Kuhuna to the Kohanim? You're supposed to be doing that. Why aren't you? And the Jews say back, because we don't have anything to give, because the king is hoarding it all for himself. And to which point Hosea turns to the Melech, to the Beis HaMelech, the house of the king, and directs his Musar, his admonishment, to the palace. And that at the end of the day, the buck stops with the king. And since the king should have been the one to set the example, and instead the king was, or the king or kings, were keeping the things for themselves, not allowing the Jews to have them, and therefore the Jews couldn't give to the Kohanim, and so it becomes therefore the Kohanim can't function properly because they're not getting the matonos that they're supposed to have, and the Jews aren't able to give them because the king has it for himself. So the blame here lies at the feet of the throne of the king of the palace. That is the theme, at least as we begin. And in keeping with that theme, in the end of this pasuk it says, "Kifache yisem lamitzpah v'reshes prusa al tavar." You were a trap on mitzpah, and you were a net that was cast on tavar. So, as Rashi explains over here, that mitzpah and tavar were two mountains from which the guards of the king were able to control the roadways that connected the northern kingdom to the southern kingdom. And it is on these mountains that he placed the guards that would prevent the Jews in the northern kingdom from going to the Ola Regel, going to the Beis HaMikdash on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. The kings did that, which prevented the Jews from going, which of course compromised the ability for the Jews to give their gifts to the Kohanim, which in turn compromised the Kohanim's ability to serve Hashem properly. So it is the blame is placed on the kings for preventing the Jews to be Ola Regel. We know that the Northern Kingdom had a lot of things that weren't done properly, especially Avodah Zarah, there were things that weren't done properly. But we know that the biggest problem that took place in the Northern Kingdom started right in the beginning of the Northern Kingdom with Yeravam ben Nevat, in that he prevented them from going to be Ola Regal. He prevented the Jews from going to the Beis HaMikdash. And that was the real, that was the source of all of the things that went wrong in the Northern Kingdom. So that, of course, is blamed on the kings. More than that, in Pasuk Beis, V'shachata seitim he'emiku, that they made that which the Jews were going away from Hashem, he'emiku, they made it to be ma'amik, means to go delve deeper. They made it a stronger moving away from Hashem. Vani musar l'chulam, I am musar for all of them. The Gemara here says that what this means is that Hashem says to the kings of Malchus Yisrael, the Northern Kingdom, my rule that I wrote in the Torah is that the Jews have to be ola regel, that they have to go up to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, 3 times a year, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. In the event that a person doesn't do it, so they are doing something wrong. That's an avera. They don't go to be ola regel. What's the punishment for not being ola regel? Being ola regel is an asay. An asay is a commandment. It's not a lav, it's not a prohibition. So we know that the punishment in most cases for not performing an asay is not as bad as the punishment for someone who transgresses a lo sase. One who does what they're prohibited from doing is usually punished more severely than one who does not do what they're supposed to do. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because what is worse, a person who doesn't do, at least they're passive. They're supposed to be doing something and they're passive, so because they did the avera passively, that's not as bad as doing something actively. A person who, for example, does not do an asay, let's say the asay of eating matzah on Pesach. So they don't physically pick up a piece of matzah and eat it on the night of Pesach. That's an avera. So they didn't do something. But picking up a cheeseburger and eating it, that's worse, because they're doing something that is usher to do. That's a prohibition. So not being ola regel is not doing an asay. So Hashem says, I don't punish so severely for that. I expect the Jews to be ola regel, and of course, there is punishment if they don't, but my punishment for not being ola regel is relatively light. There is a punishment, but it is not a severe punishment. Whereas the kings of the Northern Kingdom, their punishment for those who tried to be ola regel was capital punishment, was death. So Hashem says, you were more strict than me. All I did was I slapped them on the wrist for not being ola regel. You were killing them for being ola regel. So you were even more severe than me. It's one thing if you would have enacted a rule that would have at least only been equal to my commandment. I commanded them to go, and you command them not to go, and your punishment would be similar to my punishment. But instead, your punishment was much worse. So Hashem holds this against the kings, because you see how desperately they wanted to keep the Jews from being ola regel, they imposed such terrible punishment on someone who would try. However, once we get to the third pasuk, Ani adati Ephraim, v'Yisrael onichad mimeni, I know, that Ephraim, which Ephraim refers to the Northern Kingdom, that and Yisrael, would not be humble from me. Now, the reference to Ephraim and the reference to Yisrael, before we explain the progression of the Pesukim, the Gemara tells us that we know that Ephraim generally refers to the Northern Kingdom, while Yehuda refers to the Southern Kingdom. It's usually how it works. So, what's Ephraim and Yisrael? So, the Navi sometimes says similar things using slightly different words. Obviously, that always is supposed to connote something a little bit, something subtle, but it can be very closely related. However, the Medrash does say over here that of all of the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Yaakov experiences the rise and fall of his children, of us Jews, more intensely than the other avos. When we are doing well, he experiences that. And when we, God forbid, are not doing well, he also experiences that. So there's a reference here to Ephraim and Yisrael because it is as if Yaakov Avinu himself was brought down by the behavior of the northern kingdom. But the progression from here to the first two psukim is that we learned in Malachim that the last king of the northern kingdom, whose name happens to also have been Hoshea, but this Hoshea is Hoshea ben Be'eri. That's Ben... Let's make sure that's correct. Our Hoshea, the Navi, is Hoshea ben Be'eri. The Hoshea who was the last king of the northern kingdom was Hoshea ben Elah. Now, Hoshea ben Elah was the best of all of the kings of the northern kingdom. So the Gemara, if you recall, asks the question, if he was the best of them, and in what way was he the best of them? He finally got rid of the guards. He allowed the people in the northern kingdom to be Ola Regel. He was the first one to allow that. In all the years of the northern kingdom, since Yeravam ben Nevat, no one allowed it, but he did. So the Gemara asks the question, if Hoshea ben Elah allowed them to be Ola Regel, why is it that he was the final king? It is in his reign that Sancheriv came and took the northern kingdom into Golus. So we learned, when we learned Malachim, that the Gemara tells us that it's precisely because he removed the guards that the northern kingdom went into Golus. Because until then, the fact that they weren't Ola Regel was because they were prevented from being Ola Regel. You can't blame them. They couldn't be Ola Regel. But when Hoshea ben Elah removed the guards, the people still did not go to be Ola Regel. So that showed that all those years, they never really cared. And it wasn't the king's fault, even though the king, of course, is held accountable anyway, but you can't just blame the king if when the king is no longer preventing them, they still don't go. So that's why they went into Golis when Hoshea ben Elah, during his reign. So here, this means, Ani adati Ephraim Yisrael onichad mimeni, I know that Ephraim and Yisrael were not humbled from before me. Ki ata his nesa Ephraim nitma Yisrael, because now I see that Ephraim has been promiscuous, meaning gone away from me, and Yisrael has become tame, has become impure, because now we see all along that they were really not, that you can't use this excuse anymore. This is a common theme that we find, that that Hashem is willing to cut us slack and to allow us to use excuses, provided that we don't end up contradicting ourselves with those excuses. So that if we have an excuse, that's fine, but that means that when the excuse is no longer relevant, that we're going to do better. So when the northern kingdom did not do better, that now reflected on the entire time, that all the time that this excuse was present, it wasn't really a good excuse, because they were obviously weren't interested in being Ola Regel in the first place. And so, although we in the beginning of this perek, the blame was laid at the feet of the kings, and that's true in the first pasuk again in the second pasuk. But when we get to the third pasuk, we see that there is also blame on the people themselves, on the rank and file, for not being Ola Regel, and therefore they do end up going into Golus. Pasuk Dalet. The pasuk says, as we read, Lo yitnu malaleim lashuv el Elokeim. Their actions did not allow them to go back to their God. Ki ruach zenunim bekirbam es Hashem lo yadou. They have this spirit of promiscuity, that's the Yetzer Hara within them, and they don't know Hashem. So we spoke about this already, that the Yetzer Hara is now within them. Va'anah gaon Yisrael b'fanav, and, as you translate, the pride of Yisrael would testify before them. V'Yisrael v'Ephraim yikashlu b'avonam, and Yisrael and Ephraim would stumble with their sins. Kashal gam Yehuda imam, and Yehuda also would stumble with them. So now that the northern kingdom is stumbling, so too Yehuda starts to stumble as well, because we start to take a we start to take some example from them and begin to do the same sins.
If they were so separated that they weren't going back and forth, how did they see the example of what was going on? By messenger, they heard about it, and that was enough?
Yeah, but we learned that in the reign of Achav, so we have marriages arranged between the kings of Yehuda and the kings of Israel. So there ends up being some crossover. And in fact, as we learned in Malachim, when Yehu ben Nimshi kills out the kingdom of the dynasty of Achav, he at the same time kills out the king's family and the king of Yehuda. That was the time when Asalia was the only one left and Yehoash was in hiding. It was because Yehu ben Nimshi not only killed Achav and his whole dynasty, he nearly wiped out the Malchus Yehuda as well. Pasuk Vav, V'tzonamu v'vkaram yalchu levakesh es Hashem v'lo yimtzo, with their sheep, with their cattle, they'll go to seek Hashem and they will not find him. That means they're going to try to bring karbonos to do tshuva, but they're not going to do a sincere tshuva, so they will not find Hashem. Chalatz mehem. Now, this phrase, chalatz mehem, needs explanation. We know that the term chalitza is the term used in the Chumash, referring to the way that if a man dies without children, God forbid, and he leaves a widow, and he has brothers, so then the brothers have a mitzvah of Yibum to marry his widow. In the event they do not want to marry his widow, then they can perform chalitza. And the way chalitza works is that she, the widow, takes the shoe off of the brother-in-law and spits on the ground in front of him, and there's some sukkim to say, and there is a chalitza, and then she can marry anybody she wishes. Until that point, she cannot marry anybody but the brothers. Once chalitza is performed, now she can marry whoever she wishes. So chalitza is the final severing of the ties that she has to this family, so that she can go marry somebody else. So that is what the term chalitza... Chalitza means that to remove. That's what it means, to remove the shoe. That's why it's called chalitza. So the Gemara relates a story where there was a heretic who said to one of the Talmidei Chachamim, I wish I remembered which Talmidei Chachamim it was. I want to say Rabban Gamliel, but I am not sure. So the heretic said, you're a nation that your God has done chalitza to you. Because it says here, chalatz mehem. So he doesn't want you anymore. You are now no longer connected to Hashem. After chalitza is performed, the brothers can no longer change their mind. Once one brother has chalitza with this sister-in-law, then that's it. She can never marry any of the brothers. It's a permanent thing. It's not like a divorce which can be reversed. If the husband is not a Kohen, then a man who divorces his wife is allowed to remarry that woman if she has not married anybody else yet. But chalitza is a permanent severing of those ties. Once chalitza is done, she is not allowed to marry any of the brothers. So this heretic was saying, since the pasuk uses the term chalatz, then that would indicate that Hashem is permanently, God forbid, separated from you. So Rav Gamliel responded, you're not reading the pasuk properly. It does not say chalatz lahem, that he did chalitza to them. Chalatz mehem, it says chalitza was done from them. So he said back to the heretic, let's say the woman would come, the widow would come to one of the brothers and say, I am doing chalitza to you. And the brother would then take the shoe off of the widow and spit on the floor in front of the widow. They would reverse the roles of who's supposed to do what. So would that be an effective chalitza? And the answer is, of course not. we know that things have to be done properly. Just as with marriage, it is the husband who has to put a ring on the finger of the wife, and it is the husband who has to say Hareat Mekudeshes Li. And whereas if the bride, the kala would put the ring on the chasen's finger and say Harei Atam Mekudesh Li, whatever it is, that would not be a marriage. They would not be married, even with kosher witnesses. It is doing absolutely nothing. They are not married in the least bit. It doesn't count at all. And just like with divorce, it is the husband who has to give a get to the wife. If a wife would give a get to the husband, it's meaningless. It means absolutely nothing. So too with chalitza, it has to be that the husband comes to do chalitza to the wife, and the wife then takes off the husband's shoe and spits the brother-in-law. It is the brother-in-law has to come to do chalitza to the widow, to his sister-in-law, and then she takes off his shoe and spits on the floor in front of him. If they reverse the roles, and she comes to do chalitza to him, and he takes off her shoe and spits on the floor in front of her, it's meaningless. So the way it's written is, it says chalatz mehem Hashem, so to speak, had chalitza from them, from the Jewish people. But since in this relationship we are the female, we are the wife, and Hashem is kiviyachol the male, is the husband, therefore this means it was done in the reverse order. It was not done by the brother-in-law to rid himself of the sister-in-law. Rather, it was done by the sister-in-law to rid herself of the brother-in-law, which is meaningless. What is being connoted over here is that we are the ones who tried to sever ourselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God forbid, tried to sever himself from us. And since that is the case, the Talmud Chacham said to the heretic, so therefore, it's meaningless. It does not mean that it's a permanent thing. The heretic was correct, God forbid, if Hashem would want to sever himself, if he would try to do that, whatever that means, it would be permanent. But since that's not what's happening, it's we're the ones leaving Hashem, not Hashem leaving us, therefore it is not permanent and we can always come back. Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Ba'Hashem ba'gadu Kivanim zarim yaladu, in Hashem they rebelled, and foreign children they have born. Ata yochleim chodesh eschalkeim. Now the month will consume their portion. The Gemara says that this pasuk refers to several types of things. First of all, the Gemara says, if there's a remez over here, a hint to a man who marries a woman who he really should not be marrying for whatever reason, that she's really not permitted to him, or that it's really not a good match, but he's doing it because she is wealthy and he wants to marry into money, and that's why he's doing it. So the Gemara says that is this pasuk tells us that is not going to end well. And that's what it means over here, Yochleim Chodesh Eschalkeim, that their portions will be consumed. That it will, that they'll because of this, they will lose the wealth that they have. But in addition to that, that's a remez, that's a hint the Gemara uses. But the Gemara says, what is it specifically referring to, that they rebelled against Hashem? So the Gemara tells us that this is a reference partially to the Aseres Hashvatim, the 10 tribes, that they began to marry non-Jewish women. And as they married non-Jewish women, so then they had Banim Zarim Yaladu, then they had children that were foreign, that were no longer Jewish. And that, of course, took them further away from Hashem. But there's another reference over here, which has nothing to do specifically with the Aseres HaShvatim, but rather with the Jews in Mitzrayim. Ba'Hashem Bagadu, they rebelled against Hashem. Kivanim Zarim Yuladu, that they had foreign children. The Gemara tells us this means that in Mitzrayim, and we know this was the case, that the Jews in Mitzrayim stopped performing the mitzvah of Bris Milah. We know the mitzvah of Bris Milah was given to Avram Avinu and to all of his children afterwards. The mitzvah of Bris Milah was in effect before the Torah was given, and we Jews were supposed to be performing the mitzvah of Bris Milah. But in Mitzrayim, we stopped doing it. after the death of Yaakov and his sons, we stopped performing Bris Milah. The Jews were more concerned with trying to be accepted in Egyptian culture, and therefore they did not do Bris Milah. This is something which we don't think about so much here in the United States, because in the United States it's so common for even non-Jews to be circumcised. However, up until modern times, that was not the case. And a circumcised Jew looked very different than the culture around him. So when a Jew would be in the bathhouse and there would be other men there, it would be clear that he was a Jew because of the circumcision. And the in Mitzrayim, that was also the case. And in order to make themselves more accepted in the Egyptian culture, the Jews stopped performing Bris Milah. And if they did perform Bris Milah, they tried to mask it. They tried to make it look like the Bris Milah had not been performed. The Gemara speaks about that as well. So the Gemara says, "Bahashem bagadu." They rebelled against Hashem. Kivanim zarim yuladu, that they had foreign children. What this means is they had sons who looked foreign because they didn't give them Bris Milah. So they looked like they weren't Jewish. They looked like they were foreign. Ata yochlem chodesh es chalkehem. Now chodesh, which literally means month, will consume their portion. Say Chazal, Chodesh is the same word letters as Chadash. Chadash means new. And we know that the Shibud in Mitzrayim, that the slavery in Mitzrayim began with Vayakam Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim, a new king arose over Egypt. And this is hinting to that Melech Chadash. Now they'll be consumed by Chodesh. Read it as Chadash. They will be consumed, they will be enslaved by the new king, by the Melech Chadash. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Tiku shofar ba Giva, Chatzotra ba Rama, blow the shofar in Giva and the trumpets in Rama, Hariu base oven, call out or cry out base oven. Acharecha Binyamin, afterwards Binyamin. This is a, even though it mentions the shofar here, this is not a positive pasuk. This is a musar. This is a negative pasuk against us. Therefore, the Gemara says that when you know that on Rosh Hashanah we have in Musaf we have the special brachos of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. You have to say the bracha of Malchios to crown HaKadosh Baruch Hu as king, and Zichronos that he remembers everything, and Shofros about blowing the shofar. In those brachos, we have to say 10 psukim of each type. 10 psukim of Malchios, 10 psukim of Zichronos, and 10 psukim of Shofros. If you count them in the Machzor, you'll see that there's 10 psukim for each. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah discusses the psukim. Which psukim should you say? So the Gemara Rosh Hashanah describes some psukim which are good examples to use. It could be any 10 psukim that have to do with either Malchios, Zichronos, or Shofros. And really, any pasuk could be used. But the Gemara says, we don't use psukim that are negative for us, that are peronios. We only use positive psukim for us. So when the Gemara wants to give an example for a negative shofar pasuk, this is one of the ones that it brings. We don't say this pasuk on Rosh Hashanah, even though it mentions shofar, because it is a negative pasuk. So what does it mean? Blow the shofar and give the chatzotza and rama, hariu beisav and acharecha bin yamin. So one explanation is as follows. The blow the shofar in Giva, which means that that, let me just see how Rashi says here, one moment please. Yeah, the Rashi tells us that this is blow the shofar, which is to announce the fact that there is an army coming to attack the Jews. Why? Because by Giva, because what they did in Giva, that is where they crowned Shaul as king. They made Shaul king. Now, what was wrong with that? What was wrong with that is because Chatzotzra bar Ramah, because you have to blow the trumpets in Ramah, because Shmuel was Haramasi. Shmuel was in Ramah. Shmuel was the Navi, and we asked for a king prematurely. As we learned when we learned Sefer Shmuel, we learned at that time that we asked for a king prematurely, that we should not have asked for a king when we did, even though the Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech, you shall place upon yourselves a king, but the time was not yet ripe. We jumped the gun, asking for a king too early. That was a chutzpah, and we hurt ourselves by pushing out Shmuel and bringing in the king Shaul. So that caused a riu beis oven, it caused sin. And ultimately what it caused is acharecha binyamin, that we would be delayed with binyamin. What does that mean? Binyamin is where the Beis HaMikdash is built. The portion of the Beis HaMikdash is in Binyamin's portion. And because of the fact that we jumped the gun with the kings, that ultimately brought about the splitting of the kingdom and having a northern kingdom that prevented the Jews from going to Binyamin, from going to Be'ola Regel, to the Yerushalayim. So that's what it means, Acharecha Binyamin, to delay or to stay away from going to Binyamin. That was a result of kings. This goes back to the theme of the beginning of the parak, that not going to the Beis HaMikdash is ultimately blamed on the kings. Pasuk Tes, Ephraim l'shama siya, Ephraim will be desolate. B'yom tochecha, the day of admonishment. B'shivtei Yisrael, hodati ne'mana. With the tribes of the Jews, I have made known faithfulness. The Medrash says that when the 10 tribes were taken into Galus, they felt that there was an injustice going on. As they said, why are we going into Galus, but the southern kingdom, which consisted of Yehuda and Binyamin, they were not going into Galus. Why shouldn't they also deserve to, if we have to go into Galus, shouldn't they? And therefore they said, there's favoritism. Hashem loves them more than He loves us. Since they live near the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem loves them more than He loves us, and they therefore considered to be an injustice. But later on, when Yehuda and Binyamin also were taken into Galus, so then it became clear that there was no injustice. Hashem was not playing favorites, that it had to do with what did they deserve at that time. When the northern kingdom went into Galus, the southern kingdom didn't deserve Galus. But later on, when the southern kingdom did deserve Galus, they also went into Galus. So the Gemara says this is a reference to that thinking of the northern kingdom, that Ephraim will be desolate on the day of Tochecha. Tochecha means on the day of admonishment, or the day when it will be clear what they did wrong. B'shivtei Yisrael, with the tribes of Yisrael, meaning when all the tribes ended up in Galus, hodati ne'mana, then I made known faithfulness, to show them that in fact, I am ne'man, I am faithful, to treat everybody fairly, and it was not a question of playing favorites, but rather the northern kingdom deserved the punishment before the southern kingdom did. Hayu Sarei Yehuda kemasige gavul, leaders of Yehuda were like masige gavul. A masig gavul, the pasuk says that a person is not allowed to be lo sasig gavul reyacha. Do not encroach on the boundary of your friend. It's a form of theft. We learned this in the Sunday night class when we did it in Vayikra, that one is not allowed to move the boundary between two properties. If we share a border between our two properties, if we're adjacent to each other, so a form of theft is for me to take the border and move it into your property, so now it appears like some of your property is really my property. That's a form of theft, even though I'm not physically picking anything up and taking it into my house, but it is a form of theft. So that's called Masig Gavul. So the Sarei Yehuda, the leaders of Yehuda, were Kemasig Gavul. They were like those who encroach on the boundary, because once the northern kingdom was taken into Galus, the southern kingdom also began to behave in ways that were similar to the northern kingdom. We learned, when we learned Malachim, that most of the southern kingdom, most of the kings of Malchus Yehuda, of Malchus Beis David, were tzaddikim. And if they weren't tzaddikim gemurim, if they weren't complete tzaddikim, they did something wrong, but they were by and large tzaddikim, even though they may have done something wrong. There were very few Russia kings of the southern kingdom. However, as you get towards the end of this first Beis HaMikdash, there are more and more Russia kings. There still are some tzaddik kings, but there are more and more Russia kings towards the end. And so they were like Masig and Gavul. They were encroaching, like those who encroach on the boundary, now beginning to behave like the northern kingdom. Aleihem eshpoch kamayim evrasi on them. I will pour like water my anger. Pasuk Gedal, verse 11. Ashuk Ephraim ritzutz mishpat. Ephraim is pressured, and it's another word for pressure. How do they have it over there? Ritzutz mishpat?
Oppressed,
okay, of justice. Ki ho'il halach acharei tzav, because they began to go after tzav. Tzav literally means commandment, but they would go after the avodah zara. They started to follow the avodah zara rather than to follow Hashem. They began to follow the avodah zara. We know that the bnei noach, the non-Jews have seven mitzvos. The Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. The one might be tempted to say that those mitzvos were given to Noach after the Mabul, after the flood. Then they were given to Noach, and then all non-Jews were commanded in the Sheva Mitzvahs. But the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that those seven mitzvos were given to Adam Harishon. And they are merumas, they are hinted to in the pasuk of where Hashem commands Adam Rishon not to eat from the Eitz Hadas, not to eat from the tree of knowledge. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al ha'adam le'mor, Hashem commanded Adam saying, Mikol Eitz Hagan Ochol Tochel, you can eat from all of the trees, Umeitz, and from the tree of Hadas Tovara, you're not allowed to eat from that. In those psukim, the Gemara dissects the psukim and shows that each word there indicates a different one of the Sheva Mitzvahs. The first word is Vayitzav, and Hashem commanded. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim. Says the Gemara, that was the commandment not to worship Avodah Zarah. Because that is one of the things that the rest of the world must keep. How do we know that Vayitzav refers to Avodah Zarah and Hashem commanded? From this pasuk. Because it says here, they began to halach achar tzav, after commandment, meaning after the commandment of the Avodah Zarah. And so the word Vayitzav over there is a reference to the mitzvah of not worshipping Avodah Zarah. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Vani cha'ash le'Ephraim, I am like ash for Ephraim. Ash means like rust. For Ephraim, the charakav of Beis Yehuda, like rotting from Beis Yehuda, that there's going to be like a general rotting and rusting of Ephraim and Beis Yehuda. That visually that brings up an image of something which is falling apart and not being used properly. Vayar Ephraim es cholyo, Ephraim saw his sickness. Yehuda es mizoro, and Yehuda saw its illness. So they noticed that things were going bad. They noticed there was rusting. They noticed that there was.
Here it says wound.
Wound? In Mizoro, it would be wound. Okay. So, but they noticed that there was rotting, like in the previous pasuk, that there was rotting and rusting. They noticed that things were going bad. There were bad things happening in the countries. So how did they react? Vayelech Ephraim el Ashur. Ephraim went to Ashur. Vayishlach HaMelech Yarev. And Vayishlach means, and Yehuda sent to the king, that he should fight. So the Gemara says that Ephraim, referring to the last king Hoshea ben Ela, that what happened with him is that, as we learned in Malachim, that when things were almost at the end over there in the northern kingdom, Sanherib conquered the northern kingdom and did not take them into Galus, but made them pay tribute. And eventually Hoshea ben Ela rebelled against Sanherib. That's what it means here. Vayelech Ephraim el Ashur. He went to Ashur because he was then taken into captivity, and they were then taken into Galus. What did Yehuda do? Yehuda vayishlach hamelech Yarev. He sent to Sanherib to help him fight a battle. So when he saw things were going badly, instead of davening to Hashem, Yehuda reached out to Sanherib to help him fight battles. V'hu lo yuchal lirpo lachem. He cannot heal you. V'lo yikem yikem mazor. Will not be able to heal your wounds. You're not going to get helped by going to the foreign powers. You have to turn to Hashem. Because I am like a lion for Ephraim, meaning that's not a good thing. I'm sorry, like a snake. A lion for Ephraim, a lion that would attack Ephraim. Another word for a lion. There are several words for lion in Tanakh. So I'm like a lion against Beis Yehuda. Ani etrof ve'ilech. I am the one who will tear apart and go and leave. As Savein Matzil, I will carry off and I will not save. I will carry off the whatever it is that I tore apart and I will not save. Eilech Ashuva El Mekomi, I will go and return. I will go return to my place. Ana Asher Yeshmu Uvikshu Fanoi, until they, the Jews, will recognize their evil and they will seek out my face. Batzar lahem, when they have troubles, yeshacharunini, then they will seek me out. A reference to us in Golos, when we're having troubles, we seek out Hashem. The Gemara tells us, we learned this in Yechezkel, long time ago, that when the Golos took place, when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that it happened incrementally, and that the Shekhinah moved, that it started out, the Shekhinah normally resides, when there's a proper Beis HaMikdash, the Shekhinah resides between the Kruvim, over the Aron. That's where the Shekhinah resides, whatever that means. Obviously the Shekhinah is not a physical thing, but that's where its manifestation is in this world. And then what happened is that as we did things wrong, the Shekhinah slowly but surely moved away from the Beis HaMikdash. It went from between the Kruvim, it moved off of the Kruvim, it moved away. Slowly but surely, each move away from the from us. This is represented by the vision that Yechezkel sees in the beginning of Yechezkel. He sees Maisa Merkava. He sees a chariot. A chariot is something you travel in. That rather than seeing Hashem's throne, which would imply that Hashem is stationary, he saw Hashem's chariot, which implied Hashem was moving away from the Jewish people. That's the concept over there. The Gemara tells us there were 10 migrations of the Shekhinah, starting from on top of the Kruvim, on top of the Aron, between the Kruvim. Then there were 10 steps as it moved away, further and further and further away, until finally the Shekhinah went up back to Shamayim. And there it resides while we are in Galus, until we are able to see what we're doing wrong and seek out Hashem. The Gemara brings psukim for each of the migrations of the Shekhinah. Each time it moved, the Gemara says, this pasuk tells us it moved here, and this pasuk tells us it moved there, corresponding the psukim to the movements of the Shekhinah. The psukim are located in different places in Tanakh. Yechezkel has several of them. The 10th pasuk is this one. Then Hashem says, Eilech Ashuva el Makomi, I will go return to my place, Adash Yeshmu Uvikshu Fanai, until they see their wrong and they seek out my face. Batzar lahem Yeshacharunini, when they have pain, then they will seek me out. So that's Hashem's final traveling away from us and going up to Shamayim, and now waiting for us to seek him out, to bring him back down to us, to the land, to Eretz Yisrael, to the Beis HaMikdash.
Will it come in 10 stages, or can it come all at once?
So the Gemara says it's supposed to come all at once. Right, so that's a very good point, that even though it took so long for him to leave, but it seems like those 10 steps will be covered very quickly when it's time. Yeah, and that's...
He doesn't want to pull away so much, so he has to do it slowly.
Right.
To come back,
right.
It should be 7.
Right, but there are 10 steps, so it still is significant.
You're moving 10 places
right.
to get back.
Right, it's just
how
that
quickly you move.
They move very quickly through those 10 stages. Coming from where the Shekhinah is now and to coming down to here, right? But that's why, because of that point, we wouldn't suggest that the Shekhinah has moved one or two slots, because that's not the way it's going to work. Is when the Shekhinah moves, it's going to come all the way down, and it will be a quick turnaround that we'll have the Shekhinah again. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.